This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omised, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at Omised.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Tuesday. We are live in West Palm Beach. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. Again, big thanks to Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Go to Exclusive Furniture to get all your man cave needs like we have here. Go to Academy Sports and Outdoors to get all your Astros gear and get ready for the season. We thank them for sending us here to West Palm Beach to cover baseball all week long for you. Speaking of baseball, let's check in. Alex Bregman drama, we touched on that a few times last week. Bregman's not causing any of it, aside from being really good at baseball, being good at playing third base. Hit a home run over the weekend in his first spring training game as a member of the Boston Red Sox. Harold Reynolds of MLB.com, though, says the Red Sox, because of all the potential position shuffling or Rafael Devers being dug in at playing third base poorly, I might add, that the Red Sox have a problem.
They got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because you can't sit there and say, Bregman's going to play second, and he hasn't played there. You just don't. He's got to get the reps. Double plays. The last time he played second base, there was shifts. Rafi Devers is too young. He's too good of a defender, and the numbers are ugly, but he can still catch the ball.
And part of the problem, too, is what are you going to do with Casas then?
They got a problem. And I think they're better with Bregman at second than they are with Bregman at third.
Okay, so now we should point out Harold Reynolds was a second baseman when he played in MLB.
Yeah.
So he comes at it from a first-person perspective of what goes into playing the position. And, yeah, he's probably right. He probably does need to get some time over there at some
right,
point.
Right, right. Now, he's saying, but he feels that they're better with Bregman at second.
Yes.
Is it simply because Devers – I guess it's not as simple, especially because without the shift, it's not like you're just – second base isn't just short outfield anymore the way it was during the era of the shift
guys
were just kind of like it was a lot easier. You're aligned deep as hell, and the guys on the left side did most of the work. So is his argument that, all right, Devers going over to second, it's not as simple as him just going over and
Bregman, you mean?
No, I'm saying, is his argument that, okay, why bother moving Devers, because it's not guaranteed that he's going to be good at second either, where Bregman could handle second better?
I think I
don't understand his argument. Why is he saying that they're better with Bregman at second if Bregman's a better third baseman? Base is still a more important
position. I think because they haven't even tried Bregman there yet.
Yeah.
You know, they're still working him in at third base, I guess. Yeah, I'm with you. Like, now that I hear that audio there, like, I'm trying to figure out where the problem is.
Yeah, I didn't understand his argument, unless he just misspoke.
Yeah. It sounds like he thinks Devers is a little better at third base than the rest of baseball does.
The stats aren't great, but that he's all right. I'm not finding many people that are saying Devers is a good third baseman.
No. So, If I had to guess, Bregman's going to wind up playing second base up there in Boston. Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's shift gears for a little bit, get over to the Texans. We'll do a mock draft injection a little bit later on this hour. Drew Doherty's done his roundup here, Seth, of the what all the experts are saying the Texans are going to do.
Yep.
In the draft. And this is as split as I can remember one being in a while. I think, you know, a couple of years ago, last year they didn't have a first-round pick for most of the draft season. They made that trade with Minnesota, so they were picking 42nd. And so there was obviously, the lower you go in the draft, there's way more splits. In 2 years ago, it was basically quarterback or not a quarterback, that kind of thing. This one's kind of all over the place, and they've got three different players, each playing a different position, tied for being mock drafted to the Texans the most. Drew, for those who don't know what this exercise is, Drew Doherty, he's with the Texans, does a lot of stuff for the Texans on the media side of things. He does a roundup of mock drafts out there. And the first roundup, there were 24. There's obviously more guys putting mock drafts out there now that we're at the combine and we're getting closer to it. So he's got 37, what he would say would be respected mock drafts out there. Tyler Booker, guard. Emeka Ogbuka, wide receiver. Kenneth Grant, defensive tackle. Are all tied for first right now. They're each getting drafted to the Texans five times.
And this is what's interesting. So usually with these things that Drew does, the names and all these mock drafts, you know, it's a crapshoot. But the position, the position that gets drafted the most tends to correlate pretty heavily with what the Texans actually do in the draft. So it's really interesting that Tyler Booker, a guard, Ogbuka, a wide receiver, and Kenneth Grant, a defensive tackle, all have the same number of selections, which I think most of us in the fan base feel like, yeah, wide receiver, interior offensive line, and defensive tackle are the positions you'd most like to see taken in the first round. The way it's playing out in the draft, this is a good thing for the Texans because at all of those positions, it feels like in the late first round on into the second round, there's really good talent and intriguing prospects available. So it feels right now like it might be one of those years where Nick doesn't feel a need to move out of 25. If anything, I would think he might end up moving back, which I want a first-round pick. There's no actual rational or intelligent reason for me to want a first-round pick other than I like having first-round picks. It's a lot of fun on draft night. I don't like going to bed hungry on draft night,
Sean. You could still move back and stay in the first round. That's
right,
a possibility.
Right. But I don't want to if he moves out of the first round.
I'm with you on that one. It would be fun. That last year wasn't as fun.
Yeah.
Now they did wind up with Kamari Lassiter. That was fun.
Oh, yeah,
I like that.
But it's delayed gratification.
No, I know.
I don't do so good with that.
No, I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah, there's something. It's something bigger about hearing Goodell announce your pick, you know, like in the first round. It's three different positions. Each three guys, three different positions. Do you find yourself being more, as you're looking, let's pretend they stay at 25.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself more specific to position group or actual player?
A lot of it depends on what they do in free agency. That's a big part that we don't know right now.
If
they go out and, I don't know, whether they re-sign Stephon Diggs or pick up Cooper Kupp or go after somebody. Chris Godwin is not going to happen, but something like that would be super exciting. If you feel good about the depth at wide receiver, then you start to focus more towards interior offensive line or defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this just depends on what happens in March and free agency.
That makes sense. Do you think the mockers are getting it right now with the guys they have here? Like, do Tyler Booker, Kenneth Grant? I feel like of those three guys, Booker, Ogbuka, Grant, the one that has the best chance of still being there when the Texans pick, just based on which way the wind's kind of blowing right now with all these guys, is Ogbuka.
Kenneth Grant, I think, is going to test really well at the combine.
Yeah.
And he weighs 340 pounds but moves like he's 305.
That's Thursday, I think, is when the defensive linemen go.
So if he goes off at the combine, I think he gets vaulted up into the top half of the draft.
Would you trade up for Kenneth Grant?
I wouldn't trade up for him,
no.
I like him a lot. I like a lot, but there's a lot of guys. Like if like Tyler Booker, Kenneth Grant, multiple other guys, they can't all go higher than expected. So yeah. I think there's going to be somebody there at 25 that I like.
Gray Zabel.
But you were going to say Tyler Booker is the other one that you think probably ends up going higher.
Yeah, I think Booker. I think Booker and Gray. If I had to guess, let's put the over under at 25. Yeah. I would take under on Booker as far as the draft slot that they go. I would go. I think Booker will be gone. I think Grant will be gone. I think Ibaka. I would take under on Ibaka, too. I think Ibaka will be gone, but I think he's got the best chance of still being there.
Ibaka seems to be the one that, if I could sense, just at least on my social media feed, that I see the most people kind of skeptical about. And part of it is that he doesn't jump off the film athletically the way some guys, like other wide receivers like Matthew Golden or Luther Burden do. But he's just more refined, and I think he's got more of a NFL-ready feel to him in terms of the mental side of things and the polish side of things.
Yeah.
But when you start thinking about upside, especially at pick 25 or in the second round, people fall in love with traits. And I'm one of them. I'm a sucker for it.
Yeah.
I try to only watch highlights this time of year.
Ibaka's the girlfriend that remembers when your birthday is and cooks you a nice dinner. Matthew Golden and Luther Burden, they're a little freakier, you know?
Matthew Golden is hanging out with Steve Smith Sr. a lot.
That's extreme.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, if you're taking that analogy out, yeah.
That's true. Check his texts and see what's been discussed in there.
But it's exciting. According to Steve Smith, it sounded like she was really exciting.
Better be exciting for how he may have ruined his life.
Boy, man, this whole Steve Smith saga. Guys should carry it around. They should carry a transcript of those text conversations around in their phone, and with also a picture of Steve Smith's family.
Yeah.
And just remember, it's just it's not worth it, man.
That's it.
It's not worth it.
It's really not.
But we're so good at thinking things through rationally, aren't we?
Men, you mean?
Yeah.
Everybody. Stop paying a Pendergast.
A bunch
just
of guys
men.
In the room are like, yeah, Seth, I know. I know it's a dumb idea.
She's in
the
car with me right now.
You think I don't know this is dumb?
Oh my god,
that's not the issue.
That's funny. Gray Zabel is next on the Drew Doherty mock roundup. 4 Gray Zabel picks out of the 37 mock drafts, including
John Harris. John Harris loves him some Gray Zabel.
One of the most respected voices.
It's hard not to like Gray Zabel because I think he does all of these things as a guy from a smaller school. That he had promise, and he showed up at the Senior Bowl and looked like he'd been competing in a Power 5 conference the entire time.
Yeah.
So I think the upside there is very real. There are a lot of intriguing interior offensive line prospects. I'm just really fascinated if Nick looks at Gray Zabel and still feels like I just need more sample sizes of him against guys at bigger schools.
Johnny Harris gets influenced by things he sees at either the combine or the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
In I think in a fun way. Like Johnny knows this. I don't know of anybody who watches more of his stuff than John Harris. His opinion, his opinion's been gospel to me since I was doing radio with him in 2007. I think it's funny just because when we had him on a couple weeks ago to talk about, I think we had him on from the Senior Bowl, or he's coming home from the Senior Bowl, and he saw Gray Zabel there, and he was talking, he brought Gray Zabel's name up unprompted, and he said how Gray Zabel, during one of the drills, you know, where it's O-lineman against D-lineman, was like basically calling out a guy from Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Like, get in here, let's go. You know, like, I remember when they drafted Damian Pierce. I was doing the draft show with Johnny when they drafted Damian Pierce. And Johnny went nuts on the Damian Pierce pick. And he said, you're going to love this guy. He was at the combine, and he walked over to the bench press in slides and sat down and banged out 25 and got up and left.
Yeah.
So that's why that's like when Johnny's got good Senior Bowl and combine stories, he likes those guys.
This is as we were talking about Nick and his preference for guys from bigger schools that have faced really good competition more regularly. The prime example of that working out so far was taking Derek Stingley over Sauce Gardner.
Yes.
Derek Stingley had, and one thing Nick had talked about was it's not just his competition against SEC teams, it's the practice film of him going against Jamar Chase and all of those guys at LSU that you just, I think, feel better about it. You just
all
feel
of those
more
guys
substance.
Who were first or second round picks.
Yeah.
It's crazy. No, it's a really good point. Zabel next with 4. Matthew Golden and Luther Burden, whose names you mentioned a minute ago, they're both 3 apiece.
Yeah.
And I think they are while Ibuka is getting mocked to the Texans a little bit more than both of those guys, their film pops.
I think the thing about Golden, too, and they're both very, very intriguing. I think Golden he's not as polished, and he needs to work on his route running, but it's one of those things where he's so twitchy and so athletic that he can get away with not being pristine in his route running. But he's competitive. He's very swarm. As Texas, I think Texas fans, I think most Longhorns would tell you that, yeah, he's very swarm-like. And he can do it at all three levels. He's been in an offense where he's had the ability to do more so than Luther Burden III. They've just kind of used Luther Burden differently than Matthew Golden. I'd be really happy with Matthew Golden.
Luther Burden III was using the slot a ton. Yeah. At Mizzou. Yeah, Golden to me, in watching him for UT this year, whenever I watch him, I'm like, he looks like Tank Dell, like 3 inches
except
taller.
He's bigger, yeah. Yeah. And he plays all three positions, and he comes up big in big moments.
Yeah.
You know, like he makes contested catches in big moments. Yep. All those things that are don't show up in the stat sheet necessarily, he does all that.
We'll see what the mock draft says at 7:45 today. The last ad here on Drew Doherty's mock roundup for the Texans. 37 mock drafts, 27 of them have the Texans going offense instead of defense. That sounds right. I feel like if I had to guess, they're going to draft on offense this year between their extreme needs on the O-line and their extreme needs at wide receiver. O-line, 14 of the 37 picks are O-line picks. 8 of the 37 picks are D-line picks. Those are the leading position groups.
Oh, okay. So, are you going to die?
I have a cold. If anybody is wondering, there's no other way. Yeah, like I feel great, but I've got like a head cold.
Yeah.
So, am I going to die?
It's annoying me.
Yeah, I know. You want me to die right now. I'm just letting you know.
I think it's some survival thing where when somebody in the tribe is sick or something, you start thinking like, oh, this guy's a drain. This guy's going to be a drain on the strength of the tribe. Yeah. Ostracize him.
Yeah.
Get him out. So I'm fighting against that.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
I just want to be transparent.
To think that I'm bringing enough energy when I do talk, and I'm not coughing up phlegm.
Oh, you are. You are
not getting affected.
I'm just, you know, in my primordial brain, there is a side of me that's wondering if I'm going to have to smother you with a pillow one of these nights.
Maybe.
So just be on
one of these hours.
Be on alert.
Yeah, no, I'm expecting it by 9 o'clock. All right, so that's the roundup on the mock draft. Man, this Matthew Stafford story is interesting to me. Are you surprised that the Rams and Matthew Stafford might be headed towards a divorce?
And that he wants $50 million per year?
I'm not surprised about that.
I kind of am. Yeah, I guess Matthew Stafford he's made the second most money in NFL history. He's made $364 million in 16
seasons. Who's made the
most?
Do you have the list in front
of you? One Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
He's made $381 million in his 20-year career. Yeah, there's a part of me that's like, all right, come on, Matt Stafford. It is what it is at this point. Sorry, Lopez. I know you hate that term. You've made your money. You made a lot of money playing for the Detroit Lions, and it wasn't your fault that the Lions were the Lions at that point. But you've come and you've won a Super Bowl, and you still have your flashes of excellent quarterback play, but you're old now. Do the right thing. Play at a relative discount in your waning years for the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, I'm surprised the Rams are kind of open to it sounds like, of moving on from Matthew Stafford, that they're not digging. I mean, he's under contract. They redid his contract last year.
Yeah.
And now he wants $50 million a year. Here's Peter Schrager of the NFL Network of Good Morning Football saying exactly what we're talking about. Matt Stafford wants $50 million a year.
Matthew Stafford wants to be paid what he thinks he's worth. He wants to be paid more than $50 million. They've given the agent, Jimmy Sexton, one of the best agents in all of football, both college football with the coaches, and of course in the NFL with coaches and players, they've given him the freedom to go seek out what might be some teams that would be of interest, and if those teams would pay him. And guess what? There are teams that are willing to pay him more than what the Rams are currently willing to pay him. The question is, does Stafford want to go to those teams? And what are those teams willing to give up? It's all very awkward because McVay and Stafford may end up together, and it's just like, well, that was water under the bridge. That was business. We got to keep the emotional side separate from the business side here. Truth of the matter is, Matthew Stafford was one pass away from playing an NFC Championship game at home against the Washington Commanders this year. That guy can still ball.
That guy can still ball.
Yeah.
Peter Schrager gets excited, man. Is he Texans' fun young team level excited?
I guess this is a part of it, is that Matthew Stafford knows that he isn't who he used to be, and yet he also knows that the Rams are going to have a hard time going out and getting somebody better than Matthew Stafford right now.
Yeah.
That's where if he's playing hardball and he genuinely wants that top dollar, I guess – the flip side of it is, all right, man, if you want to go somewhere, any team that's willing to pay you $50 million per year is probably not a team that's right on the brink of who, tell me who they are.
Well, let's workshop it. Yeah. Peter Schrager says these are some places he might go.
You look at the teams and you look at the options for the Rams. Say you trade him to the Steelers. Are the Steelers willing to give a first or second round pick and pay Matthew Stafford $50+ million? And is Stafford willing to go play in Pittsburgh in the cold weather? And is Kelly and the four girls, are they going to want to go move out to Pittsburgh? How about the Giants? Giants, they're not giving up the third overall pick, but would they be willing to give up the 34th overall pick and pay him $55 million? If that's the case, does that make sense? The Raiders are an option. Who knows? You can go down the list.
None of those teams make sense if you're Matthew Stafford.
If you're Matthew Stafford.
Unless all you want is $50 million, and that's where I think this is just posturing and negotiating and trying to find a good deal.
If the Steelers had Matthew Stafford instead of Russell Wilson last year, they would have been a bigger threat.
They fell apart completely down the stretch, and it wasn't just the offense. I don't think he can realistically say that, oh, yeah, the Steelers, playing in cold weather, which he hasn't had to do. He played in the dome in Detroit, and he's played in nice weather
in
L.A. as an older guy.
Yeah.
You go ahead, and I would show him, if I were the Rams, I'd be like, hey, come on in. Well, let's watch some film. Here's Ben Roethlisberger a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd that old man do up there in the cold? So, I don't know. I think he ends up with the Rams.
There's a lot of smoke around the Giants, and that just doesn't make any sense for either side to me.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to – what's the best you can expect to be? They have no weapons there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd be outdoors. That's a point I've not heard anybody make until you made it.
Well, Schrager made it, so.
Oh, did he say it about the outside? Yeah. Okay, yeah. I was too busy with him being focused on the wife and the kids.
And Jimmy Sexton.
Kelly,
he's one of the best agents in the business.
Kelly and the girls.
Kelly and the four kids.
They'll go where he goes. what's going to happen with Kelly and the girls? I'm like, he makes $50 million a year. Listen to yourself.
He has children.
Oh, my God.
How can he play for $35 million per year?
Yeah. So the Steelers one is interesting to me just because I think they're above the line of being a good team. I know they're not a great team. They made the playoffs last year, which, you know, by definition makes you at least a competitive team in the NFL. That one was intriguing to me. The Raiders and the Giants, both super intriguing because I think they flame out spectacularly. I think Stafford would be, it would be as if he were back on the Lions again.
Yeah, I don't. Okay, I would put. The chances of him leaving the Rams this year at 25%. I mean, if you look at what the Rams have done, and this is one of the reasons that 17-year-old kid just got the GM job in Jacksonville. He was a director.
We'll talk about him.
He was the director of scouting. What's his name?
James Gladstone.
Gladstone.
Yeah.
That's a good villain name.
Villain face.
He's not that young. He's 34. But one of the reasons he got that job was he was director of scouting for the Rams. And the Rams have done a really good job drafting in the last couple of years. Yeah. Puka Nacua, Jared Verse, multiple other guys. And it does not feel like a team, as Peter Schrager pointed out, they were on the brink of going to the championship game last year. It's the best spot for Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense for him. And I don't want to diminish like how much $10 or $15 million is. Sure, that's a lot of money. But that would just it would honestly annoy me. It would be a completely mercenary move.
Total cash
at the end of your career, after you're the second highest paid person in the history of the NFL, despite not nearly being the second best player in the modern era. Don't overthink this or get overly greedy.
Well, especially if it comes from somewhere else, then he's like, chances are he's leaving to go to a worse place,
right,
to take the money.
Yeah,
you know, as opposed to like, if the Rams just gave it to him.
Yeah, so which is why I think whatever he's doing right now is just posturing to not get hosed. He's not going to be a charity case for the Rams. He just wants to get a good
charity
contract.
Case. Yeah, he made $40 million last year. Charity case. Boy, the list of guys who've made the most money, man, I'm just looking at this right here. Kirk Cousins, sixth.
I know. Russell Wilson is fifth. These are the ones. Who does not belong? Oh, boy, it's better to be a good business person than a
So these are the top 10 right here.
Yeah, I've got the top 10. Aaron Rodgers is first. Matthew Stafford is second.
Okay, so let's say Aaron Rodgers first. That fits.
Yeah.
You know, he's won four MVPs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matthew Stafford second. Okay.
Matt Stafford fits partly because, remember, the whole problem with Matt Stafford and the Lions was that for the first time in their life they drafted well over those couple years, where all of a sudden everybody, Ndamukong Suh, Matthew Stafford,
Calvin Johnson,
those guys were all making, and their rookie contracts were under the old CBA.
Yes, that's
so they made a boatload of money right from the get-go.
Right out of the chute, yeah.
Matt Ryan being Tom Brady's third.
That's fine.
Which is in, he played at a discount for many, many years.
Yes.
Matt Ryan at fourth. That's the first one where you're kind of like, huh.
That's a little bit.
Huh, all right.
Got to a Super Bowl, won an MVP, beloved in Atlanta.
Yeah. But
fourth.
Perennially more than just like, hey, had a couple of stud wide receivers for a long,
yeah,
long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, some of this is, these are just sheer
longevity.
Longevity, yeah. And the dollars are earned, you know, more recently than, say, some of the other guys.
Russell Wilson at fifth is, I'm torn on that one because he was so good on a really, really good team,
yeah,
early in his career. But then was the subject of conversation for 10 years about whether it's him or the offensive coordinator or Pete Carroll's fault.
I can't get mad at – well, okay. Russell Wilson fifth is crazy when you think of how much of that money is going to have come from that Denver Broncos contract,
yeah,
extension.
Yeah.
He'll probably have ended up making more money from that extension than he made in Seattle.
Yeah. Kirk Cousins at sixth is a mess.
I'm less insulted by Russell Wilson at five.
No, he's won a Super Bowl and gone to two,
yeah,
and yes.
Once you get to Cousins at six, Cousins just gamed the system, man. Happily took a couple franchise tags.
Yeah.
Got the first – I mean – if you're trying to pick one, which one of these guys is the most significant in terms of like the business side of things, Kirk Cousins, quarterback who happily played under franchise tags.
He's the best business person of all of them.
Got the first fully guaranteed contract.
Yeah.
Granted, it was only 3 years, but fully guaranteed. And then somehow with a torn Achilles, managed to get another $100 million guaranteed from Atlanta. Was benched by the end of the year.
Yeah, he pushed free agency the way that baseball players do, which is another thing. Russell Wilson has his agent's a baseball agent.
Yeah.
Like, they treat it more, both those guys treated it more like baseball players do, which is like, okay, fine, whatever. Yep. Fine. You want to franchise tag me? Yeah, fine.
I think that Netflix series too, quarterback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quarterback helped Kirk Cousins.
Oh, you know, when it showed his toughness.
Well, his toughness, his studiousness,
yeah,
like how he got along with his teammates.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, when Atlanta got out the checkbook to write him $100 million guaranteed, that there were people in that room that had seen that and said, "Oh no, I watched this. This guy was an amazing teammate to all of his teammates there in Minnesota."
Grunting a lot, kids. That's one of the secrets to getting approval from football people.
Grunting a lot.
Really, make it look hard. You might be winning a wind sprint and not even be. It might be easy for you. Put a grimace on your face.
Make it look hard.
People want to believe that you suffered for it, okay?
If you're in a cubicle, shuffle papers around
a lot, and look
really frustrated.
Do the work. I'm not telling you to be lazy, but every now and then it's okay to let people know, like, oh, yeah, I'm really grinding. I'm going to put a hashtag on me.
Put a little sauce on it. I got zero problem with the next three just to round out the top ten. Drew Brees, 7. Roethlisberger, 8. Peyton Manning, 9. Peyton's probably too low, but
yeah,
a lot of his money was earned. Before, you know, some of these guys are still active, that kind of thing. Dak Prescott, 10th. My good personal close friend, Dak Prescott.
That's right.
10th.
You're drinking, buddy.
$247.6 million for Dak Prescott. For how many playoff wins? How many times he's gotten to the divisional round? One, maybe two? Dak Prescott? Most? I think he's won two playoff games, Dak. $247 million. That's good work, man, if you can get it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. We are live in West Palm Beach. We are covering the Astros here for spring training. Weather is beautiful outside today, so I would suspect we are going to get baseball. Rene Blanco on the mound for the Astros against the New York Mets. A couple other football things. We'll circle back to baseball here in a little bit. An unknown team is requesting a ban of the tush push.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes. Yes.
An unknown
and
team.
And listen, before you get angry at me, anybody, it's not for the reasons you think that I don't want the tush push. It's for a reason that's even worse than one you think.
What is it?
Okay, so some of the arguments for the common arguments against the tush push are, one, that it's just too successful. And the stats don't totally bear that out. Now, when it comes to the Eagles and the Bills, The Eagles, they've run it the most. Yeah. They've scored a touchdown or achieved a first down on 87% of their attempts using the play.
Okay.
While the rest of the NFL has been successful on 71% of their attempts.
Okay, okay.
Like, they've been very, very good at it. But Sean McDermott, the coach of one of the teams that does it the most, yeah. the Bills,
yeah.
He says there are safety concerns with it, which is weird. So it feels like he's saying, like, oh, yeah, we're doing it, but it's kind of dangerous in some respects, and maybe they need to tweak it a little bit. I don't mind the safety concerns. I don't mind even the competitive side if people feel that it always works. I don't like it because it's a boring football play.
Yes.
It is an incredibly boring football play. And then when it's not – even when it's not successful, it's still boring because it doesn't feel – it's rare that you feel like, oh, somebody came up and made the crushing stop or anything. It's just one big scrum that moves at a centimeter's pace, and you can't even really track to see exactly if they're in or not. I hate it.
I'm with you on that too. That's the big thing to me. Like it's boring and stupid.
The Eagles versus the Commanders game was unwatchable on a goal line stand because they kept running it. The Commanders kept jumping off sides to try to stop it, and they kept moving it incrementally closer. They were down on like the 3-inch line,
yeah,
and they just would go down and move it a few centimeters and then move it again. It was so annoying.
Now counterpoint to that,
yeah,
we did get what was new knowledge that referees could just award touchdowns.
Yeah, the
to
ref
teams.
Came out. Was it Hockley Jr.?
It was Hockley Jr.
Hockley
yeah.
Jr. came out and said, if Washington jumps off sides again, we will award the touchdown
yeah.
to the Eagles.
Yeah.
Which, oh boy, I just, at that point, I was just wishing that it was the Chiefs doing it. Can you imagine if it was the Chiefs doing the touchdown?
Well, yeah, the funny thing was all the memes while that game was going on of, like, the memes of, like, people taking notes and saying, like, Kansas City yeah. Chiefs, when finding out you can get a touchdown.
But then, lo and behold, you get into that conference championship weekend. It was so annoying because you have the Bills that do the tush push a bunch. And it was a huge part of that game. Right, and it was unsuccessful, and they stuck with it. So that made it interesting, at least.
Yeah.
Because meanwhile, James Cook's not getting any carries in the second half. They're doing a tush push and getting stuffed every single time.
Yep.
But it was just annoying. It's an annoying football play. I'm tired of it.
The speculation is it's the Packers who are the team, the mystery team, because they're – CEO Mark Murphy has been pretty outspoken about it, about the tush push. He called the tush push, quote, bad for the game after the Packers were eliminated by the Eagles. He wrote on the Packers website, there's no skill involved. It's almost an automatic first down on plays of a yard or less. I would like to see the league prohibit pushing or aiding the run, end quote.
Which used to be a rule for a long, long time.
Which they should go back to.
Yeah.
I hate that. The guys can just push their own guys.
I can't even remember the rationale for why they changed it, but it took a long time for the league to figure it out. Because nobody used this, and then teams started realizing, like, oh, wait a second. We've all been trained from the time we were in Pop Warner, you're not allowed to push a ball carrier if you're an offensive player.
Yep.
Why are we not doing this now that it's legal?
Yeah.
And thus was born the tush push.
The tush push, man. Yeah, the tush push. So, I don't know if it's a Packers.
I think it might have been just it was hard to – it was maybe too hard to enforce because there's times where – you know, you get to a first down or something where an offensive lineman is trying to knock a defender off, but he might be also pushing the ball carrier.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. The tush push is pretty damn obvious.
Tush push, yeah.
You're shoving that quarterback.
It's silly, man. It's silly. Reminder to keep listening. We're going to be giving away some rodeo tickets here shortly. Zach Topp on March the 11th, so stay tuned for that. We got Mock Draft Injection coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes or so. We're live in West Palm Beach. Astros and Mets today, 12:05 Houston time. So, yeah, tush push was one. And then the other rule, possible changes to the kickoff rule coming. They talked about that the touchback. This was my prediction, too. Is it until the only way that you're going to get more and more returns – regardless of how you line up, is as the touchback gets more and more punitive. To you know, I thought the difference between kicking it out of the end zone for a 20 touchback at the 25-yard line for the kicking team and the 30-yard line was not a big enough difference. And for a lot of teams, it wasn't. A lot of teams just opted to boom the ball out the back of the end zone and give it up at the 30. Talk is that they may move that to the 35 now.
So we get more action. You remember how ugly it was in the Hall of Fame game? Remember, I thought it was going to be a disaster because it was so ugly. It was scary. It did not look safe at all.
I didn't know what they were doing.
On the safety side of things, it seems to have worked out. The NFL had the fewest concussions, I believe, since they started tracking it really seriously. Yes. So that was one of the improvements to it. I've grown to like it, even though I'm still a little bit confused by it. I almost just kind of just look away from the playoff. Part of it, too. The TV broadcast, they got to stop trying to get so cute with the punts and the kickoffs. That overhead cam does nothing for me.
Oh,
you can't really track or feel. It's disorienting. I get nauseous trying to watch it. And you can barely tell whether the guy's even gaining any ground or
that's
not.
That's the biggest disconnect right now between fans who watch games and people who are responsible for putting the broadcast together.
Yeah.
Is they think we want way more camera angles than we do.
Yeah.
That's not the case. I remember during the NCAA basketball tournament one year, they had a camera that was literally like on the ground where players check into the game there at the desk, like at center court. So you're getting this shot. It's like a upskirt shot.
It's upshort shot.
Yeah, like
you're kind of like it's like you're plopped down somewhere and you don't know where you are.
No, the regular angle is really good. That's a reason we've been using it for 75 years or whatever it is, you know? So the overhead angle.
I feel like it's just a way they're trying to make special teams somehow interesting.
No.
It's not. You know, this is how you make special teams interesting. Just be sure the announcers start yelling when there's a good return so I know to look up from my phone and start watching the special. I pretty much ignore all special teams until there's actually something big
happening.
Looking
at you, Al Michaels.
give
us a little.
Returner takes it to the 35 and now the 45.
Give us a little something, all right?
50. You know, this reminds me of a time in 1957. Now, he scored a touchdown, by the way.
Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you. Are you a Hooters guy?
No. Well, I mean, what, the restaurant or the actual Hooters?
The restaurant.
Oh, okay. Oh, no.
See, I was back in the day.
I like the things, though.
I loved it. Yeah.
Well, I like Hooters in general.
Well, then you should go.
The...
Well, you can't anymore, but you would have loved the restaurant.
I can't. They're in bankruptcy. They're not. That doesn't mean that you can't go to a Hooters.
Well, they're closing a lot.
Oh, they are closing
a lot.
Yeah,
they closed several in Houston.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a sad day, man. Back when I was in that sweet spot of an age where you would go to Hooters all the time.
Yeah.
The age of our boss, Parker. Like, I was in the, like, right in that sweet spot of around 30 or so. Like, that was, spent a lot of time at Hooters having some business lunches.
Yeah.
It was good.
You're a sales guy.
I was a sales guy. Like, you know how much business got done at Hooters?
Good time. Go get yourself a buffalo chicken sandwich and buy some telecommunications equipment.
That's exactly right. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but what I've heard is that the most business is done on the New York Stock Exchange, second most the Chicago Board of Trade, third most all of the Hooters nationwide combined.
Yeah.
That's where most of the good business
gets
done.
But it stopped being that way as much as... Yeah, before Hooters came along, it was Beef O'Brady. So.
And you should have seen the ladies walking around that one. I think what happened was like a few places came along and maybe just did it better, I guess.
There's a lot of competition.
The restaurant, yeah. Yeah, we're a big Twin Peaks outlet here at Sports Radio 610. They do that mode pretty well.
Yeah. So are they closing? So Twin Peaks drove out Hooters.
Possibly. I mean,
they closed a bunch of locations, but they're reorganizing.
They're trying to.
They're not dead as a company.
They're not dead yet.
This feels like Kmart was for a long time.
Another
great place to go look at some Hooters.
Yeah. Some good ones. Huh? Girls of Kmart was one of the best Playboy issues every year.
Kmart was so depressing for the longest time.
Oh, yeah.
When they were getting driven out by Walmart and Target and everything.
Yeah.
Because you'd go in and like is this a flea market or is it a retail establishment?
And you'd be like, so the end is near, huh?
Yeah.
And I admittedly have not been to Hooters in a while, but I will, if this is indeed heading towards where it looks... weigh in on the text page. How are you feeling about this?
So for journalistic purposes, you feel like you have to.
Yeah.
You have to document it.
Yeah. Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns was pleading for Hooters not to go out of business. And again, he's in the sweet spot.
I feel like Hooters should have at some point just maybe updated the outfits a little bit.
Well, the pantyhose were always something that was a little, pantyhose underneath the orange shorts?
Are you like a secretary for my great uncle? What the hell are you?
Nothing beats a great pair of legs.
Pantyhose and then just the orange shorts and it just felt like a... this was This was fly in the 80s.
They opened, I was reading an article about this yesterday. Yeah. I read several articles about this because it meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
But apparently in some places they'd opened up like I forget what they call it. It was like Wings of Hooters or Wings of Hoots or something like that, where it was a more family-friendly version that had both like male and female servers like normal outfits.
Normal outfits?
Yeah. I'm like,
they
no.
They didn't have like the man showing up as mammal toe or anything? Okay.
No, not that I know of. It didn't say in the article.
There needs to be a women's counterpart called Bulges.
I didn't say.
The Battle of the Bulge.
I didn't say in the article. All right, so just if it's RIP, it's RIP. But, man, Hooters, we had some good times together, man. Love the peanut butter cake. A good peanut butter cake.
Mm.
And wings. Yeah, it was good. It was good. All right, mock draft injection. CBSSports.com's Garrett Podell. Who does this one excites me? Who does he have the Texans taking? We will get to that coming up next.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
I love when listeners harken back to things that happened on the show 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 years, whatever it may be ago. Wait, here's a text. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Wait, so Hooters is closing? Damn you, Ross Tucker.
For those of you who don't know, Ross Tucker had once claimed that if you really like a restaurant, you shouldn't tell anybody about it.
Right.
Because then it'll be harder to get reservations or the crowds will be too many.
Yes.
So we had it as the worst take of the year for a while. That's been supplanted, but good job, listener.
Good job.
Ross Tucker at one point probably said something on Twitter about Hooters
about
being
Hooters?
A fun place, and now they're bankrupt.
Does Ross strike
Or his? No, I guess he didn't. Yeah, because he refused to.
Yeah.
Yeah, he refused to say anything.
Yep.
Yeah, even though he enjoyed it.
Refused
now
to tout them.
Now they're destitute.
Yep. Now they're not. They've closed locations, just to be clear. They're in bankruptcy.
What's crazy, coming full circle on that, I can remember in high school the first time Hooters came to our city. We were a suburb of Rochester, and it would have been 1991 or 92.
Yeah,
I can remember the guys at my high school being like, "We gotta go to Webster to go to. There's a Hooters coming." So they skipped school for a day to go to
Hooters.
Yes, like a 40-minute drive.
at that age,
yeah,
worth
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. It was a big deal back in the day.
That was always the funniest thing to me. Like, there'd be cities that have a Hooters. Like, oh, I wonder what a Hooters is like in Rochester. Like, no, every city has enough good-looking women to fill a staff at Hooters.
Or enough women to fill a staff at Hooters. Yeah. They can fill a staff. There's a difference.
Dude.
There's a difference between the Rochester Hooters and the South Florida Hooters.
Well,
I grew up
in Hartford, Connecticut, which isn't actually exactly the beacon. Our buddy John, who listens to the show, I hang out with the Lizards, literally just texted, "Dude, the Hooters in your hometown of Hartford was solid." He goes up there on business a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is what we take pride in. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Being the insurance capital of the world and a solid Hooters. Thanks, John.
Wait, is there more than just. Is Hartford where all the insurance companies are?
Yeah, it's the insurance. That's where a lot of them are headquartered.
Okay.
Yeah, yep.
I guess I should have known that.
Yeah.
I also didn't know the name for the hashtag. We're watching
Octothorpe.
I had zero clue.
We watched game shows last night here.
Yeah.
For those wondering, we watched Split Second
Wall. We were waiting for the Cougs game to start, at which point Sean fell asleep immediately. But I was
up for the Wall.
I don't think I've ever heard that in my entire life, and both you and Parker Hillis, our program director, knew it. I felt really dumb.
I did not know it. I was just guessing. It sounded right to me.
Oh, you know that's in the multiple choice portion.
Yeah, it just sounded right. So I'm like, yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Octothorpe.
I thought it didn't sound right because there's 9 squares in that hashtag where I thought, like, okay, Octo would have made,
Octothorpe. Is it the 8 on the, it's the pound is its own button. Never mind.
Yeah.
Octothorpe. All right, mock draft injection. Let's get to this here. Garrett Podell, CBSSports.com, has this mock draft out. I admit sometimes I pick them based on who the person is that's putting them out. Like, you always pick a Daniel Jeremiah mock draft because he's a well-respected. I'm not saying Garrett Podell is not a well-respected voice. I'm not as familiar with him. But when I like his pick, I'm going to use this mock draft here. So let's do it. Mock draft injection time. With the 25th pick in the Garrett Podell CBSSports.com mock draft. The Houston Texans select Matthew Golden, wide receiver, University of Texas.
Yeah, Matthew Golden, somebody to get excited about.
Tell me about him, Mel
Kiper.
He's
tough. He's gritty. Yep. He'll go up after it and win contested catches, and he does it in big moments. But he's just very, very twitchy. He's like a cricket on meth, Sean. He's twitchy. He is all twitched up, and he just and to the point where he gets away with not being a really polished route runner.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seems like he's a good dude. I think he's going to accept coaching. He plays all over the in all three positions at wide receivers. Mm-hmm. So he's a little bit on the smaller side, but he's not Tank Dell small. He's about 6'1", 190, I believe. I'd be really excited about Matthew Golden.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, obviously, he's played in big games and big moments, and he's come up big in big games and big moments.
He has got Cougar ties. He was with the University of Houston, and then NIL set in.
Yeah.
And he wound up at the University. Yada, yada, yada. He wound up a Longhorn.
So he's already rich.
Yeah. So he's got money.
That's a plus.
Off the board, yeah. There's one thing I want out of my draft picks, money. They need to be rich. And they actually kind of do. If there's a draft pick that hasn't compiled a lot of NIL money yet, I've got questions.
I'd like to start to base it on.
I started as a joke, but then I'm like, no, I'm kind of serious.
Wonder, though, now they're, you know, we've talked to Sari about this in the early days of NIL. It is one extra data point that you've got to look at is, all right, how did this guy handle his NIL stuff? Was it a distraction for him or anything else? And maybe it's a little bit better of a preview of which guys are mature enough to handle the NFL.
100%.
It's a big, and it's more so than back when I played. It's always been really good money. I'm not whining about you know, guys making more now. But there is a level now to where when you get into the second through seventh round picks and even the rookie free agents, they're making so much more money, like above and beyond the effect of inflation, than they used to, that I feel like it's for every NFL player now, you've got that concern. Because, like, okay, back in the day, the rookie salary, the rookie minimum was like $97,000, which even adjust that for inflation, it's a lot of money, but it's not, you know, I don't have to work for a few years if I don't want to money. You know, it's not buy your mom two Escalades type of money.
No.
Where now the minimums are so high that I feel like every single player, a lot of them are probably better off having had NIL for a couple of years because they've made some mistakes, but they've also learned how to manage it, and it's not as much of a shock to their system when they get to the NFL.
Or they've actually gone through the process of finding somebody to manage it for them who's done a good job.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry. Like,
One less hurdle that you're thinking about or distraction as you're trying to focus on football.
Yeah, yeah. No, I 100% believe that. All right, so still off the board at that for this draft were Kelvin Banks, Armon Membu, Kenneth Grant. Wow, a lot of guys. Burden, Ibuka, the two wide receivers. Still on the board were Gray Zabel. Dylan Booker was still on the board, and Donovan Jackson still on the board. Would you rather Matthew Golden or any of the offensive linemen that were still sitting there at 25 right now?
Oh, I think, again, it depends on what they've done in free agency. At this point, let's say they didn't sign anybody in free agency.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh.
You like Booker?
Damn it.
Booker or Golden?
Booker. Give me Booker.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine.
If we're going to be in a good position, Sean, if they pick at 25, I have yet to see a pick that the Texans have taken one of these mock drafts where I don't feel good about it.
Yeah.
It's that kind of a draft this year. It's not that I've lowered my expectations or anything. It looks like it's probably going to work out pretty well for the Texans. Now, it's all a crapshoot one way or the other. You never know for sure if a guy's going to work out. But it doesn't feel like you're going to be scrounging for scraps at 25.
No, there are guys there you and I like. Then the question becomes, do they take any of those guys?
Well, and that's the nice thing about wide receiver right now is that you already have your Nico Collins.
Yes.
If the Texans were a team that was choosing 25 and we didn't feel good about any of the wide receivers, then you start to feel like, oh, crap. But then the other positions you need, interior offensive line especially, lots of times the best guard in the draft isn't, or certainly the second best guard in the draft might not go until late in the first round.
You know that well.
It's just that type of position.
Yep.
So defensive tackle is a little bit of a different scenario, and yet there's still, in this draft class, there's a lot of guys you can feel good about at 25 and later.
Agreed. Pettycast, I think this is the pettycast Seth has been looking forward to most. Have you listened to any of the James Gladstone audio yet?
Just the ones you played for me yesterday. I know you've got like six here that are
awesome.
There's
four cuts that, and one of them is gonna. I think one of them is gonna give Texan fans flashbacks to somebody.
Oh.
Somebody not good.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yes. Love that in the pettycast. We do the pettycast. We get super petty. Start texting yours into the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line 713-572-4610. What are you petty about? We'll get to that next.